Okay, our next speaker is Miss Daisy Lei, and she is currently a doctoral student and faculty research and teaching assistant with the Department of Behavioral and Community Health at the University of Maryland College Park. Daisy earned her dual master degrees in Asian American Studies and Public Health from the University of California, Los Angeles. Her MPH concentration was in community health sciences with specializations in global health and health promotion and health education. Daisy's primary research interest is in sexual and reproductive health among minority populations. Currently, she works in the CHAMP lab, or the Community Health Awareness Messages and Prevention Lab, in the areas of cancer, health disparities, and health communication, among others. She currently assists with research grants on community-based and culturally appropriate interventions with an emphasis on spirituality and religiosity. Please welcome Ms. Lei.
Hi, everyone. Welcome again. My name is Daisy, and I'm currently at the University of Maryland. I thank you all for coming today in support of everyone up here. And Monique, thank you for the introduction. So my presentation today is called Making an Impact. And before I start, I want to say that although we are funded by ACS, I have no relationships to disclose. The overview for today's presentation, there's a lot that we can talk about because it is a community-based participatory research project, but I will only briefly go through the background and the formative research phase, and then I'll try to spend a little bit more time talking about the project overview and the current baseline findings. So we know that African American men are 60% more likely to develop prostate cancer and twice as likely to die from prostate cancer when compared to European men. Some of this may be due to a low prostate cancer screening rate, but some of the correlation has been also on the lack of access to health information technology. So because we believe that African American men are at greater risk for getting prostate cancer, we believe that they may benefit from getting the necessary information to help them make the best choice around prostate cancer screening. With that said, the Men's Prostate Awareness Church Training Project, short, it's known as MPACS, our purpose is to develop and to evaluate a four-part workshop series that's focused on informed decision-making around prostate cancer screening. We work with African American men in the Prince George's County, and they are between 40 to 69 years of age. We are a community-based participatory research project, and so we do work with trained community health lay advisors, and through them, they help us to deliver the workshops to the community. They do, at each of our churches that are involved, they do select two individuals to represent the church who are selected and known thereafter as community health advisors, and they're trained from our project to take it back to their actual church to present the information. Being that we are a community-based participatory CBPR project, we believe that this approach is really significant because it helps increase the participation in the community as well as the trust from the community. And so our team is a very diverse team of co-investigators, of students, of community partners, and of community members. So throughout the process, we work with them from our development stage to the implementation stage to the evaluation stage. In every part of the project, we do work with our community members on this. Again, being that we are CBPR, we have our community health advisors as our direct contact with the congregation member. So our project works with 20 churches in Prince George's County. At each church, we select two individuals. They are trained and certified by the University of Maryland staff. They go through a day of training, and then they get certified for 1 hour, which includes a written exam as well as a mock session where they actually do the presentation, and we do provide feedback on their project, on their presentation. The CHAs are then tasked to be in charge of recruitment and in leading the four-part workshop series at their church. And we believe that their role is very significant because they help us raise awareness. They know their congregation very well, so they are in a better place than, we believe, researchers to take the workshops back to the community and to share the information. And they do so by using our intervention materials. We're there throughout the process to assist them in terms of logistical items, I guess. But with our intervention materials, we are spiritually based, and we do use scripture throughout our project. And I'll briefly talk about that today. There is a spirituality and health connection that we believe in and that our project is based on. We use, these are just some of the techniques that we use. So we incorporate scripture, the idea of testimonials or witnessing. We know that the African American community is a highly religious group, that the church plays a huge role, and the church plays a very instrumental role in the fabric of the community. We know it's a place of healing for the soul, the spirit, the mind, the body, and so it's very important for us to make sure that not only is it church-based, but it's spiritually based as well. And so that's a component that we believe, that we're measuring, that we're hoping will make a difference in this community. So briefly talking about the formative research component, we were mixed methods, and there were three main components that we focused on, and that's of our convening an advisory panel, focus groups, and cognitive response interviews. So I'll go back. So our, throughout all three of the processes, we have community partners and community members involved. They provided input and insight into everything from beginning to, or at least our advisor panel. They're still involved with us. They will be, you know, through the evaluation stage. But they helped us create the materials that we have today in the project. So yes, we wrote a grant. We had an idea of what would work, but it wasn't until we got the feedback and insight and input from all three of these phases that we incorporated other components that I'll talk about. So we had to modify our intervention a lot. And two of the components that came about was incorporating a women's health piece, so incorporating women into a men's health intervention, and then a health information technology piece that primarily focuses on text messaging. So our focus group, we had two of them, and then cognitive response, they were one-on-one. At this point, our primary materials were developed already, and they gave more feedback in terms of critiquing our graphic design. So whereas the advisory panel and the focus group gave feedback on the needs of the community, cognitive response were to help us critique our materials and to help us redefine them. These are just briefly some of the material edits that we made to our project. We learned from our formative research phase that there is a need for branding, that it is actually very important, and that we needed, you know, we had a research name that was really, really long, and they suggested that maybe we should shorten it and consider an acronym. They suggested having a logo of some sort that can be tied back to the project. It allows for credibility. To have polos, because we are in the church setting, and for when our community partners go out and recruit churches and to network, they need business cards, and they need something that would make them tied to the project. And so as you can see here, we hired a graphic designer to help us design the logo, and it really kind of emphasizes what the project is about. So in the back there's stained glass, and there's a cross, and then a group of men holding hands around the in front of the window. And so our training manual, one of the edits that we made was that originally it was in a narrative form, lots of words, you know, it was like a handbook. But we realized that it wasn't the best way to have to train our community health advisors. A suggestion was to make it a workbook type manual, and so we had basically transferred our PowerPoints into the manual, and we had the note-taking sections. And so it was a very hands-on type manual that the community health advisors worked off of, studied off of, but also were able to keep at the end of our training sessions so that they can refer back to it. So what modifications did we ultimately make? So before I get into that, I want to kind of remind you all of the basic design. So we do work with 20 randomized churches. It is a cluster randomized trial. We work with 20 of them. At each church, we have two community health advisors. And 10 of the churches are then assigned to the meal-only condition. And the other 10 are then randomized into the health, what we call the dyad or health partner condition. This is just to let you know that we are CBPR, and throughout the entire program, besides process evaluation, which is really important, we need to remember to always get feedback and consensus, and you know, we're continuously working with our community partners. This is just some background in terms of the content that we do have at our workshop. So we start off very, you know, because it is a research project, we start off heavily based with paperwork, but we only give a basic overview of the project. And as they progress through the workshop, you can see that the content gets a lot more specialized and specific to our research design. So we talk a lot, we spend a whole session on informed decision making, the pros and cons of screening, because there is a controversy around the PSA test, because there is the PSA and the DRE exam. And so, as you can see, by workshop 4, we also provide resources as well. In terms of research design, we focus on, we have also a 6-month one-page survey that we mail them, and at 12 months, being that we are CBPR, we also have a final report back session that we find very important to have when we're working with the community. Not only do we, you know, go in and collect the data, but we find it very important to make sure that we provide that data back to the community, and that's part of our work on sustainability and making sure that it's a partnership that continues on even after we are done with our research question. So the health partner piece, basically what we learned from affirmative phase was the women are the gatekeepers of health, generally speaking, in the African American community. You know, that's not for everyone, but it was what we learned, and that we basically added this component because we want to assess if the health partners would make a difference in helping the men make their decision on prostate cancer screening. So we did incorporate that. And the second thing we incorporated was this health information technology piece, so a text messaging system that one of our consultants who is here today also helped us develop. But with the work of our community partners, our team members, we created a library, and with every key message that we created for our library, we also made sure that there was at least one spiritually based theme and one health related theme text that went out with it. So I know this could, again, be a longer talk, but I'm going to skim through and just give you an example. For example, if our key message was this idea around balance, the top one you can see is very centered around this healthy living lifestyle idea. And then the second one is an actual scripture that was pulled out that, you know, our community partners helped us with, but we did identify something that would relate back to our key message. Our pilot study. Briefly, it was held last year over the summer. Before we can roll out our program and, you know, have it full force in 20 churches, we wanted to make sure all these modifications actually is feasible, first of all, and that it could, you know, is acceptable in the population. So what we did was we actually pilot tested our co-ed group, so our dyad group, and we factors that we examined included how effective our CHAs were in getting the information out and also in assisting the men through the process of making the decision. And we also wanted to know, primarily with this pilot, we wanted to know if actually opening it up to the women was a good idea and if it was feasible. So let's see. So this is just the basic, I guess, demographics on those that were involved in the pilot study. What we ultimately learned was that, yes, it was feasible. Yes, it was actually a really great idea to open it up to the women. Through our pilot study, we learned that the men were highly interested in getting text messages from the project, that they thought it would be a great idea because it, not only is it a reminder to attend the workshops, because you know, we want to maintain the men over time, but that it also reminded, like, the little tidbits, the scriptures actually would make a difference. And so we had a very favorable response for both. And one of the best things about the pilot study was when the women broke out into their women's session, it still allowed the men to have their own small group discussion. So the whole point of having the men's health program is so that they have this, you know, safe, supportive environment where they can share, you know, men health-related information. You know, and some of them are really great because there are personal stories that are shared that they may not want other women at their church to know. And so when we broke the groups up, you can see that the discussion was, was a lot more vibrant because once the women got talking, you know, there was no way to really stop them. And it gave us a lot of great qualitative data in terms of our field notes and everything as well, and it helped us kind of figure out what other questions we should ask in the future breakout groups. Moving forward, I'm going to share some of our baseline findings. Again, this is just baseline, so we although we are a lot further along, by the when we had calculated or collected, entered our data, at this point we only had baseline data entered for 11 of the churches. So about half of our trial, I guess. And so in terms of baseline data, who took part so far? Our target number is 480 men, so 24 men per church. At this point, the data being presented today is on 221 men. Most of them were the average age was 55, and most of them were, for the most part, part-time or full-time employed and were married. Being that it is a church-based and spiritually-based program, they are a very highly religious group, as you can see here, and they are very involved in church activities. 95% of them were Christians, and on our scale of 40 on spirituality and religiosity, the average was 37 out of 40, which is really high. In terms of health insurance, a lot of them indicated that they had insurance. A lot of them had it through their employer, that should say insurance through employer or work, and a lot of them basically said they had access to care, that they had a regular doctor that they saw. And so I thought that was an interesting find, because when we read the literature, you know, we don't see too much of that. We see the opposite end, but being that it is church-based and perhaps those involved, we're trying to look into this a little more, is basically what is the difference is what we want to know. In terms of prostate cancer knowledge and awareness, our whole project is based around this idea of informed decision-making. So we're not there to tell them, you need to get screened. We're there to give them the pros and cons of screening and to let them make that decision on their own. Because, again, there is that controversy around particularly the PSA exam, which is the blood test. And so, as you can see here, their baseline knowledge was that they didn't know that there were pros and cons to getting the screening. Our data from this baseline set basically showed us that they were on both ends of the extreme. So they either were really for the screening and knew only the pros, or they were on the other end and didn't want to get it at all, didn't want to really know about it. So we know that they basically didn't know, didn't express knowledge that even experts in the field did not agree on prostate cancer screening rates or screening pros and cons. We looked at self-efficacy, and as you can see here, the men all indicate, a large percentage of them indicated that they were very confident, had high self-efficacy in terms of getting the PSA test and the DRE. However, when it comes to actual behavior change, and we know that self-efficacy is a good predictor, but it doesn't ever really translate into behavior change, what we see here is the first line, although more than half of them had gotten the PSA or DRE test at some point in their life, this number substantially dropped almost by half when we ask them if they've done it in the past 12 months. So you can see here that there's, in terms of maintenance and going for recommended screening, like the timeline, it doesn't really align. And so we definitely want to explore this a little more at our 12-month follow-up sessions, where we, you know, after we've collected all the data and we go back and we have that report back session, we want to talk, have a discussion with them, a dialogue with them about why are these numbers the way it is, and to add qualitative data to our quantitative assessment. Barriers to screening, again, most of them, majority of them, said that they did not feel that there were barriers. Out of a scale of 40, the average was 9, indicating that they did not feel like there were barriers. But when we did kind of look at, those that did talk about barriers, what the top three were transportation costs and having a test would make them worry about getting prostate. So these are just some background information about, for those that did feel like there were barriers, what they were. Surprisingly, although time was on there, it didn't rank in the top three for barriers, which was very surprising to us as well. And then lastly, in terms of the mobile technology piece, as you can see here, overwhelmingly, the men reported very high use of the cell phone, and that they used it for text messaging, and that they would like to receive text and continue to receive text from the MPAC project. And the numbers are really high to us, because we do work with 40 to 69, so we were surprised that the rates were that high. Although the men did admit, those that were over 40, they did admit that they didn't use it as regularly as their younger counterpart, we learned this through our formative phase, they did indicate that they actively engaged in it, and that, not surprisingly, that some of their congregation already had text messages systems in place, where their churches or the pastors or whoever's in charge of their health ministry, they already have the system in place. So it was only an added bonus for the project to incorporate it. And so our next step, this is where we are. We recruited all the churches. We're about 80% done with the four-part series. We do encourage them to continue to use our materials to continue to have this discussion. And that we are currently working with our sister project on getting our training materials and certification sessions online, and that they could actually use the program, like the colorectal and breast piece, to also present it in a similar format to their congregation. Implications, we do want to add to the men's health piece, the growing literature, and also the health technology piece for this particular population. And before I end, I also want to thank everyone that's involved on the project. Actually, two of them are here today. Thank you for supporting us. And without, I can't express enough how much support we get from our community partners and our community members. Without them, we wouldn't be where we are today. We wouldn't have access. We wouldn't even know how to start to interpret the data. So it is a very rich project. And if you have any questions, I can definitely take them now. We don't have medical, records or access to any of that, so that would be definitely a limitation of the project. But we do ask us in our follow-up surveys, and we do continue to ask that question to see if that has changed. So, that's the limitation of self-reported data. But the question, we do talk about the actual procedure. So if we were describing the PSA test, we do say it's a blood test, to do this. And if it's a DRE, we say it's a finger test, to at least, in case that they don't recognize the acronym, that they at least know what we're talking about. So it is a limitation, and I wish we could get medical records, but that's not where we are now.
Any
other questions?
You said that in your study that you're
speaking about 40 churches, or is it 20 churches, and each church has two representatives to lead the workshop. They're all located in Prince George's County, Maryland. So that's one of the criteria in terms of the churches and how they get recruited. So they do have to be in the Prince George's County area.
Okay. What are the dynamics of that region? Is it more suburban, urban?
Definitely not suburban. Would you say urban? I would say it's mixed. But most of the churches, yeah, I would say that leaning towards the urban side, but it is mixed. And even across the 20 churches, the demographics are very different as well. Like when we're at each of these churches, the dynamic is very different within the church. Some of them are a smaller church, their smaller church may be predominantly women, and the women are the ones that come out more. Whereas another one is a huge, almost not, I wouldn't say that they are mega churches yet, but they have like 10 ministries already in place. So it really ranges, but we don't exclude any. We don't have a criteria different that we use to separate that. But we will be looking at those factors, like what's in place, what structure they have already, and to see how that affects how they present the program, perhaps.
Yeah, that's interesting. If one church has multiple ministries, do
it would still count as one body, so they would be enrolled as a church. But surprisingly, what we learned from the study is even though a church has like 10 ministries, sometimes those churches may have less of a participation rate because the churches are so involved with so many other things that there's less participants at our actual program, surprisingly. So.
Whether to get
Absolutely. So that is one of our key points. We not only ask them to talk to their physician, but the whole reason we brought in the health partner piece was we understood the importance of the family in the setting, and that it's a discussion that should also be had for the loved ones around them. You know, if it's not their health partner or women piece, then their daughters, particularly their sons, it's very important for them to, if they feel very strongly about not getting screened, at least knowing the rates and knowing how it affects their community, maybe they can share that information with others in their life. So, yeah.
Was this, since it was a CBPR project, was prostate cancer screening a priority for the community, or was it sort of a decision-making process with you and the community saying, well, maybe, you know, was that their priority, or was it yours, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, so very good. It is CBPR, so that research topic totally could have went a different way, right?
Okay, yes.
But it had originally came up because of the PI, Dr. Cheryl Holt, she did a lot of this work, the cancer work, in Alabama. But we also know Alabama is not the same as Prince George's County. And so when she came here, she had networked and worked with the community partners to identify what the need was in the community before they submitted the grant. And the grant, I believe, was submitted at least 3 times before it was actually funded. So.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.